All right, Kibbutz Say, good morning. Let's begin. First, I want to thank Yaakov and Monica Luxemburg for dedicating the shiur this morning as a zechus for the Refuah Shlema for Frida Lavona Bas Yedida. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she will have a complete and enduring Refuah. Thank you for the sponsorship. Shkoyach. All right, so we'll say and also, of course, our shiurim this month are dedicated by Yona and Shushi Ehrenfeld in commemoration of the upcoming yard site of Yona's grandfather of Gedalia ben Yaakov HaKohen. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Neshama will have a complete aliyah in the family in Nechama. Okay, so we'll say, so let's begin. Zayin Amud Aleph, the Mishnah, beautiful, beautiful block of Gemara ahead of us today. Thank you to Yehuda for giving the shir yesterday and for getting everyone to davening, I think, by Mizmor Shir, which was Baruch Hashem, exceptional, Shekoyach. Believe me, there's a lot more Yehuda has to say and can say, so Shekoyach Yehuda, thank you. All right, so let's begin. Zayin Amud Aleph, the Mishnah. Misha Nigmar Dino Ubarach. So we'll say a very interesting case. Someone goes ahead. Nigmar Dino is a situation where a person goes ahead and had his verdict handed down by Beis Din. And what happens? He runs away before the Beis Din is able to go ahead and carry out the verdict. Ubalef me osa Beis Din. And I will say, so in this case over here, case number one is that he's coming back to the same exact Beis Din in front of which, or by which he was convicted. Rashi points out over here, lifne osa Beis Din, shenischayibo. So far, so Reuven's convicted. It doesn't matter whatever the crime is. He's convicted in Beis Din A. He runs away before the punishment is carried out. He then shows up back again in front of Beis Din A. So what's the halacha? In Sosrin as Dino. I will say literally, in Sosrin as Dino means literally, we don't deconstruct his din, which also says another way of saying we do not retry him. We don't retry him. Look at Rashi. In Sosrin, Lachzer Velisa, Velisa, Velisa in Os Ula Yiske. I will say we don't say that, listen, since he went ahead and he escaped before the punishment was carried out, now he's coming back before Beis Din, let's retry him, because maybe this time we'll find some type of schus. Maybe we'll find some type of merit, some type of benefit. We don't do that. Rather, again, I will say it's a very specific case where he's running away, coming back to Mamish, the same exact Beis Din. We don't retry him. So we'll say similarly, any situation where two witnesses get up and say, Me'idim anu b'ish ploni, shenigmar dina b'Beis Din shel ploni. Anytime that two witnesses come along and say, we testify that so-and-so was tried and convicted in a particular Beis Din, and ploni uploni edov. And similarly, again, so-and-so and so-and-so are witnesses. So we'll say, in this case, the witnesses are providing a number of pieces of information. Number one, we'll call him that Reuven was convicted. Number two, the Beis Din that convicted him. And number three, the witnesses, the Edim, who went ahead and served as part of the process of conviction. So what's the halacha? Harei zeyi harik. So we'll say, this is obviously talking about a capital case over here, that again, based on the testimony of these witnesses, we will execute the individual. We'll say the theme of the Mishnah is, you see, is the idea of retrying cases. So again, guy escapes after being convicted, shows up in the same Beis Din, we don't retry it. Witnesses show up and say Reuven was convicted in front of so-and-so Beis Din, and so-and-so and so-and-so are his witnesses, we don't retry the case, rather again we carry out the punishment. Sanhedrin, though, I guess, ba'aretz u'b'chutz aretz. So we'll say the Sanhedrin operates both in Eretz Yisrael as well as in Chutz Aretz. So we'll say, it's actually a very interesting halacha, which we are going to spend more time on in a later parak. This idea, the Rambam qualifies this. The Rambam says, when the Mishnah speaks about Sanhedrin, what does Sanhedrin refer to? So Sanhedrin obviously does not refer to the 71 member court, because that Sanhedrin does not operate outside of Beis Din. That Sanhedrin only outside of Eretz Yisrael. That Sanhedrin only operates not only in Eretz Yisrael, but only in Lishkas HaGoz, only in Shemir Fiyun Son of the Beis HaMikdash. Rather, again, when the Mishnah speaks about Sanhedrin, what is it referring to? The 23-member Beis Din. Remember, again, from our Sanhedrin days, first Mishnah in Sanhedrin, capital cases can be tried by a 23-member Beis Din. Those types of Bate Din can operate outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. However, the Rambam gives the caveat that 23-member Bate Din operating outside of Eretz Yisrael can only work when the 71-member Sanhedrin is operating in Eretz Yisrael. So this is, again, we'll get into this more now. The point that the Mishnah is making is, don't think that capital cases can only be tried in Eretz Yisrael. It's not true. Capital cases can be tried out in Chutz La'aretz as well. Sanhedrin, so we'll say this, of course, is probably the most famous statement in all of Maseches Makos. So Sanhedrin ha'oreges echad b'shavua, Nikra Chovlanis. A Sanhedrin who would execute someone once every 7 years is called the Chovlanis. We'll say Chovlanis means a damager or a destroyer. In other words, that Beis Din gets a bad rap if it kills, if it executes someone once every 7 years. So we'll say, now the novelty of course in this Mishnah is so much time is dedicated ultimately again to the halachos of executing someone that you would have thought that these issues came up on a fairly frequent basis, to which the Mishnah says, just understand, we do anything and everything in our power to avoid executing people. And therefore, a Beis Din which would have to carry out the death sentence once every 7 years, is mamish called the chovlon, it's called the destroyer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah omer echad l'shivim shana. Plus Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah says, once every 70 years. So let's say, you see the imagery over here also. Is it once in the Shemitah? Right? Is it once in a number of Shemitos? So the idea over here is even once every 70 years would be a Chovlonis. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva Omrim. So this is actually an amazing statement. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon both say, Ilu hayinu b'Sanhedrin. Had we been on the Sanhedrin. Now take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Ilu hayinu b'yomim she'Sanhedrin donu dinei nefashos. So we'll say, remember again, this is actually very important. This is why you have to know a little bit of Jewish history. Rabbi Akiva lives during which time? Which time? Already again, second Beis HaMikdash era, but again at the time when the Sanhedrin stopped going ahead and adjudicating capital cases. Remember again, we learned in Sanhedrin about the various stages of exile of the Beis HaMikdash. By the time really Rabbi Akiva rose to prominence, they're no longer being dan dinei nefashos. So Rabbi Akiva, same thing Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon say, Ilu hayinu b'Sanhedrin, if we were members of the Sanhedrin, lo nerag adam me'olam. A person would never be killed. I will say, this actually is a fascinating statement, because at the end of the day, they're saying it like some type of accomplishment. The Rishonim discuss this. What does this mean? If somebody deserves to be killed, they deserve to be killed. And saving someone from a death penalty when they're deserving of a death penalty, who's to say that that's some type of accomplishment? But we'll see what they mean. Rabbi Shimon Amiel says, so Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon, kind of continuing on the theme of this Mishnah. A Beis Din that kills someone once every 7 years, a Beis Din that kills someone once every 70 years is not good. Chavlanis, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon says, you know, if we were on the Sanhedrin, so we would have never carried out a death penalty. Rabbi Shimon Amiel Omer, Af Hein Marbin Shovchei Damim B'Yisrael. You think that's an accomplishment? You think there would have been something good that you would have never carried out, a death penalty? In fact, what you would have caused would have been a proliferation of murderers. Why? Why I will say, because the one thing that keeps, that sometimes keeps bad people in check, that sometimes prevents people from doing really bad things, are the repercussions and the ramifications that they could face. Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon are going on record as saying, if we were part of the Sanhedrin, we'd have made sure no one would have ever been executed. Rabbi Shilman says, Shkoyach. And then you know what there would have been? You would have saved the murderer, and there would have been a proliferation of victims. If there's no fear of repercussion, if there's no fear of punishment, then ultimately all types of negative things occur. Let's understand this Gemara, we'll say. Beautiful Mishnah. Says the Mishnah. So now, remember, the first thing the Mishnah taught us was, if somebody was judged and convicted in front of a Beis Din and then ran away before the punishment was carried out, if they show back up in front of that Beis Din, then what? We do not retry them. We do not retry them, rather again we carry out the punishment. Says the Gemara, they also Beis Din who they insostrin. So when are we talking about? I mean, when do we, we'll call him Reuven. When do we not retry Reuven? That's when Reuven's showing up in the same Beis Din by which she was convicted. Ha lifnei Beis Din achar sosin. We'll say, what can you infer from this? That if Reuven were to show up in front of another Beis Din, meaning not the Beis Din that convicted him, but another Beis Din, then what? We would retry. We'll say, sosin literally means deconstruct, right? Demolish, meaning we deconstruct his din and retry him. So, one second. Hatani Seifa. But yeah, we learned at the end of the Mishnah. Komakum shiyam dushnaim v'yomru. Anytime two witnesses come along and they say, Mi'idin anuas ish ploni, shidnik mardino b'beis din. So I say, anytime, b'beis din ploni, anytime that two witnesses show up and they say, Reuven was convicted by this certain beis din, and they name the beis din. Uploni, uploni, edav. And the witnesses who convicted him were so and so and so and so. Hare ze ne'rak. He's killed. Rabbi say, what do you see from there? You see from there that even if Reuven escaped, let's say he was convicted by Beis Din A, he escaped before they carried out the sentence. He shows up in Beis Din B, so the Gemara is just pointing out over here that we have contradictory inferences. From the first statement of the Mishnah, it sounds like the only time we won't retry Reuven is when? when he's showing up in the same Beis Din. But if he shows up in Beis Din B, then the Maaseh will try him. Yet, if you look at the Sefer of the Mishnah, what does the Sefer of the Mishnah say? If witnesses come along, and witnesses say, we know that Reuven was convicted by Beis Din A, and so and so and so and so are his witnesses, then what? We don't retry him, and we kill him. We'll say the Mashmos of that is what? Even if he's showing up in front of what? A different Beis Din B, a different Beis Din than the one that convicted him. So which one is it? Do we retry him in front of another Beis Din or not? Amar Abaye, lo kasha, we'll say, this is wild. Amar Abaye, lo kasha, kan Beretz Yisrael, kan b'chutz l'aretz. It depends, ultimately, again, where he's showing back up. It depends where he's resurfacing. Listen to this. Tisanya. Rabbi Yehuda ben Dostoyer, Mishnah Rabbi Shem ben Shetach, Baruch me'aretz, l'chutz l'aretz, ain't so soon as Dino. If Reuven was convicted in Eretz Yisrael, and what? He shows up in another basin and chutz l'aretz, we do not retry. Now, understand, we don't retry him in this case, where witnesses show up and witnesses say, we know Reuven, he was convicted in front of Beis Din A, so and so and so and so are his witnesses, that's when we won't retry him. However, mechutz la'aretz, I will say, listen to this, if Reuven was convicted in chutz la'aretz, and then what? He shows up in Eretz Yisrael, then what? Sosrin es dino. Ultimately, again, we will go ahead and retry him. Why, Abosai? Get ready for this. Mipnei zchusa shel Eretz Yisrael. Because ultimately, again, the zchus of Eretz Yisrael. Abosai, I was going to say, nefesh b'nefesh should use this, but actually it wouldn't be a good gemara to use nefesh b'nefesh, but all right, listen to this. Mipnei zchusa shel Eretz Yisrael. Come to Eretz Yisrael and get a second lease on life, right? No matter what you've been convicted of. Actually, I think they were accused of this, but the gemara is... So look at Rashi. Mipnei zchusa shel Eretz Yisrael. Ulai toya limtza lo pesach shel zchus. I will say, so what does Rashi say over here? That maybe ultimately, again, in Eretz Yisrael, they'll find some type of limud schus. They'll find some type of way to find some type of merit and some type of reason not to carry out the particular sentence. I will say, I'll tell you something amazing. So it sounds like a very beautiful Gemara. And again, but understand that it's halacha l'maisa. So the Rambam paskins this way. This isn't Perek Yud Gimel halacha ches in Hilchos Sanhedrin. Listen to this. Mamsh Pesach of the Rambam. Mishnig Mardino Bebeis Din Shai B'chutz L'Aretz. So I will say, if somebody was found guilty in a Beis Din B'chutz L'Aretz, Ubarach LeBeis Din Shabbat Eretz Yisrael, and he runs away to a Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, so what's the halacha? Sosin Estino. Both say, we retry him. Now again, I want to be clear. It doesn't say you acquit him. It could be that they'll find him guilty again. But what? We do retry him. So Sosin Estino, I'll call upon him. Vim hayu osan, Rambam gives one exception. Vim hayu osan bezin atzman shering bar dino bethnehem, ain Sosin Estino, af apishe gamru b'chutz l'aretz zahim atar Yisrael. So we'll say, so there is one exception to this rule. One exception to this rule is, if he's convicted by Beis Din A in Chutz L'aretz, and then Beis Din A decides to relocate in Eretz Yisrael, and the same convict, right, shows up in front of the same Beis Din, just before they were situated in Chutz L'aretz, now they're in Eretz Yisrael, okay, that far we don't go, right? We love Eretz Yisrael, but that far we don't go. If it's the same exact reason, we won't retry. But we'll say, you see this yisod, that if he's convicted in the Chutz L'aretz, runs away before the punishment is carried out, shows up in Eretz Yisrael, we will retry him in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because says the Gemara, Mishum Schus Ad Eretz Yisrael. So we'll say, what does this mean? Mishum Schus Ad Eretz Yisrael. So first of all, again, so Rashi's understanding of Mishum Schus Ad Eretz Yisrael is, Ulai Limtzolo Pesach Shel Schus. Maybe they'll find some reason in Eretz Yisrael to exonerate him. Maybe they'll find some reason to let him free that they couldn't find the Chutz L'aretz. Why? Dayanim are Dayanim, right? Halacha is halacha. So we have the concept of Avira d'Eretz Yisrael Machkim. This idea ultimately, again, that the heir of Eretz Yisrael has the ability to endow someone with an additional wisdom. So it could be that Chazal are operating on this idea, Avir Deretz Yisrael Machkim, that ultimately, again, the heir itself of Eretz Yisrael has the ability to endow the judges with an additional dimension of understanding of wisdom. Whereas I think it's a different idea. What's the pshat of Avir Deretz Yisrael Machkim? What does that mean, that the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes you wiser? How does that manifest itself? So there's a beautiful insight of Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman actually brings down this idea by the Meraglim, which is actually quite amazing. You know, the Rebbe brings down by the Meraglim. The Meraglim come back. I've mentioned this before. The Meraglim come back and they say to Klal Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz Ocheles Yoshvel. It's a land which consumes its inhabitants. Right? Now remember again, what does that statement mean? So Rashi gives us the background to that statement, where again, everywhere the Meraglim went, what was happening? People were dying. Right? There were Leviathans everywhere. But again, that was of course by design to keep the attention of the local inhabitants off the Meraglim. They understood it to be that it was a diseased land. So the Rebbe says so beautifully that the Meraglim were absolutely right. Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz Ocheles Yoshveha. What does that mean? That when you go to Eretz Yisrael, the land consumes you. The land envelops you. The land overtakes you. See, you could come to Baltimore. Let's be honest, this is a beautiful community. You could come to Baltimore, and the truth is, you could drive through it, you could walk the length and breadth of the city and the county, and you will not feel inspired. You will not feel inspired. I mean, you might have less money on you by the end of the... you might not have your watch anymore. You might not have your wallet. But at the end, so you might feel enlightened in a physical way, like just because you have less. But one second. But the idea is that the greatness of Eretz Yisrael is that it totally envelops you, right? It totally overtakes you. You feel overwhelmed by its spirituality. The Rebbe says, Rabbi Nachman says, that's Avira Deret Yisrael Machi. That there's something about the land, there's something about the schus of the land that envelops you in its totality and allows you to see things differently. One of the things specifically that Eretz Yisrael gives to us is a din of v'haftarecha kamocha, is a love of our fellow Jew. Meaning there's a certain achdus that's engendered by the land, by Eretz Yisrael, that is not engendered by Chutz Lartz. It's just the metzias. It's just the reality. So perhaps if we take that idea from Rabbi Nachman, that's the idea over here. That what is it? Reuven was convicted in a basin of Chutz Lartz. Reuven was convicted by a reputable basin of Chutz Lartz. But maybe when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, which is the Eretz Ocheles Yoshvel, the Kiddusha of the land totally envelops you and totally swallows you up. And to the point that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you feel differently about your fellow Jew, you feel differently about your nation, you feel differently about Am Yisrael. Maybe the Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael will be zochet to find the Pesach that the Dayanim in Chutz Laretz were unable to. Not because the Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael, Chutz Laretz are chas v'shalom any less qualified, but just because Avir Da'arad Yisrael Machkim, the air of the land causes you to become smarter, causes you to love your Jew and a fellow Jew in a different way, causes you to see the good in your fellow Jew in a different way. And maybe that will ultimately be the schus that will allow Reuven to be acquitted. Incredible Yisod. Sanhedrin Ohagis. Well, let's go back there. Sanhedrin Ohagis. Remember again, the Mishnah said that the Sanhedrin operates both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laretz. Which means that you could adjudicate capital cases even outside of Eretz Yisrael. Where do we know this from? The Tanur Rabbanon. So we'll say, the Gemara is actually quoting over here the Pasuk from Bamidbar, and actually the Gemara leaves off, interestingly enough, the Gemara leaves off the most important part of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, these will be your eternal statutes. So we'll say, B'chol Moshvo Seichem means what? Wherever you live, which means that capital cases, it's not, they're not confined to being adjudicated in Eretz Yisrael. It's b'chol mosho seichem. Wherever you live, ultimately, again, you could adjudicate capital cases. L'madu, she Sanhedrin nohages b'Eretz Yisrael, ba'aretz u'b'chutz l'aretz. Well, so we learn from here that what? The Sanhedrin can operate both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz l'aretz. Im kein, ma tamlor b'sha'arecha. So we'll say, if indeed you could try capital cases even in Chutz l'aretz, then what? Why does the Pasuk use the lashon of b'sha'arecha? In your gates. We'll say this is by Parsha Shoftim. Shoftim v'shotrim titin l'cho b'chol sha'arecha. So what's the pshat? To which the Gemara says, v'sha'arecha ata moshev bat edinim b'chol plachu plachu b'chol ir v'ir. We'll say they teach you the following. That as much as you can adjudicate capital cases in Chutz La'aretz as well. Lemaise, again, there is a fundamental distinction between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael. What's the fundamental distinction, Rabbi Osayim? That Bisharech and Eretz Yisrael, Atza Moshev Bat Eidin B'chol Plachu, Plachu B'chol Ir V'ir. In Eretz Yisrael, you establish Bat Eidin. Rabbi Osayim, Plach literally is a province. Ir is a city. So the Pashtos, every province is made up of multiple cities. So the idea is, in Eretz Yisrael, you set up Bat Eidin in every single city, as well as regional Bat Eidin in provinces. U'b'chutz l'aretz, ata moshev b'chol plach u'plach. In Chutz l'aretz, ultimately, again, you set up Bat Eidin in every province, v'ata moshev b'chol ir v'ir, but not in every single city. So we'll say that's the distinction. So again, Salocha Lemaisa, we could try capital cases outside of Eretz Yisrael as well, as long as the Sanhedrin is sitting in Eretz Yisrael, And I will say the fundamental distinction in the legal framework is in Eretz Yisrael, but they didn't in every town and every province. In Chutz Laaretz, only in provinces, but not necessarily in every single city. Sanhedrin Aregis. So we'll say, remember again, then the Mishnah ended off with the following almost like Hashkafic debate about the role of Beis Din in meeting out punishment. So remember again, the Mishnah said that a Sanhedrin that kills once every 7 years is a Chavlonis. Second opinion, once every 7 years is a Chavlonis. Iboilu, Achos L'Shivim, Shana, Nikreis Chavlonis, Odilma Orech Aras. So we'll say, listen to this. So remember, the second opinion of the Mishnah said that even a Beis Din that kills every once in 7 years is a Chavlonis. So we'll say, the Gemara asked a very interesting question. Is that saying, Achos L'Shivim, Shana, Nikreis Chavlonis, Odilma Orech Aras? Or is the Mishnah saying once every 70 years is acceptable, or even once every 70 years is called the Chovlanis? To which the Gemara answers, Teku. Let's say we're not sure. In other words, but the Gemara is unsure. Is the Beis Din saying that even once every 70 years is unacceptable, or is it even that once every 70 years is acceptable, more than once every 70 years is unacceptable? Tegu, says the Gemara, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Kiva, Omer, Ilu Hayinu. So let's remember again, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon say that if we were alive, if we were sitting on the Sanhedrin, then what? Sanhedrin would never execute someone. So we'll say, so what does this mean? Hechi Havu Avdi. So what exactly would they do to prevent executions? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, Dami Tarbayu. So what would they say? Risem. Shefa Harag, Shalim Harag. So let's listen to this. So Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tafim will say the following. If we were sitting on the Sanhedrin, and Reuven's brought the trial for killing Shimon. So when witnesses show up, and witnesses say, we saw Reuven kill Shimon. Rabbi Tafim, Rabbi Kiva would say to the witnesses, what? Well, let me ask you. Was the victim, Shimon, was he a Shalim? Was he completely healthy? Or was he a Trefa? Or as well say, what does a Trefa mean? Trefa is someone who is going to die. Now we have, you'll say that as well, isn't every person a Trefa? So we'll say the idea is, we saw in Sanhedrin, the definition of a Trefa is someone who is going to die because of some type of fatal, either illness or abnormality within 12 months. I know that was bad English. They're going to die within 12 months as a result of some type of illness or some type of internal injury. So Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Taf will say to witnesses, okay, now both say, now from a halachic perspective, and we're going to see this, we're going to discuss this, sugya. From a halachic perspective, what's the halacha if you kill a treifa? If you kill a treifa, technically, you're putter. Why? Because halachically, the treifa is already considered to be dead. We saw this concept in Sanhedrin, that if you kill someone who is already condemned by Beis Din to die, you are not liable for that act of bloodshed because it's as if he's already dead. So to a treifa, it's as if he's already dead. So Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon will say to the witnesses, you're showing up in Beis Din, you're saying that Reuven killed Shimon. Well, okay, we know you saw Reuven killed Shimon, but tell me, was Shimon Shalim or was he a treifa? Was he completely healthy? Was he a treifa? Now, obviously, what's the answer to that? The answer to that is you never know. I mean, some people you might know they're a treifa, but lamaisa, again, a person could have some type of internal reality that you don't know about, and therefore, again, perhaps they were a treifa. So the Gemara says, "Am Rav Ashi im Tinsom Shalim Hava." So let's say the witnesses say, "Well, for our purposes, it looked like he was a shalim." Dilma b'makom sayif nakahava. Maybe I will say the place, the spot where Reuven plunged the sword into Shimon's heart, right, or in wherever it was, nakahava. There was already a hole. Or as well say, already hole means maybe he had some type of internal trefa injury, and therefore that exacerbated the injury that ultimately caused him to die. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Imtim Salama Shalim Harak Shiomra Bedaknu La'achar Misaso Mikol Shmona Esrei Trefa. So also listen to this. Let's say the witnesses say, we did an autopsy. Leaving aside the halachic ramifications of autopsies, right? We did an autopsy and we saw internally he was fine. So they would count, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tavon would counter that. Well, maybe he did have a trefa condition. What was the trefa condition? He had a hole in his heart, exactly the spot where Reuven, the assailant, stabbed him. So therefore, what, Rabbi Osai? Therefore, what? It won't show up in the autopsy. Why won't it show up in the autopsy? Because Lamaisa, it's the same spot where the stab wound was. And therefore, maybe he was a treifa, but you just didn't see it in the autopsy. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand this. I understand how you could potentially acquit. Now, obviously, we're going to see from a halachic perspective, actually, these types of claims do not really hold any kind of real water. Because my Shabbos, so we go after a rov. And again, we're going to discuss, this is one topic that's being brought up in the Mishnah. We're actually going to see this brought down later on in the Gemara. The idea ultimately is that when, meaning this, if this is true, if Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon are correct, then what? You can never execute anyone. You can never execute anyone because there's always the possibility that somebody was a treva. So we'll say, obviously, we do not subscribe to this idea halachically, yet it is interesting to see Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon's svara. So says the Gemara, fine. So Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon, you show me how you would convict every single murderer, but what about Bebol HaSa'er V'Hechi Echi Avu Avdi? So we'll say, ultimately, again, what about a case of immorality? What about a case of adultery? Where witnesses show up and we saw Reuven having relations with someone else's wife. So how would Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon acquit in that case? So also Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon would say, did you see, it's a metaphor, did you see the tube in the applicator? Which I will say, or the applicator in the tube, which is what I was saying, did you see an actual maisabia? I will say, now, but pashtos, most times that people are with their witnesses would be testifying about an act of immorality, an act of adultery, they're not literally seeing a maisabia. They're not literally seeing an act of relations. They're seeing circumstantial evidence that ultimately, again, tells us that an act of immorality occurred over here. So apparently, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon would say, no, you can't convict someone unless you see a maisabia. So how would the Rabbanan in this case is everyone besides Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon who do convict even if you don't see an actual maisabia. How would they convict? Amar Shmuel b'menafin mishir b'menafin. I will say that halacha l'maisa, we convict for acts of immorality when we see sheyiru k'menafin, when people are behaving themselves like adulterers. What does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Mishir kiminafin, mishinagu inyan niyof, sheshochvin bikiruv basar, v'noagin bederach tashir. So we'll say, actually, we'll discuss this in greater depth. Like, Pashtos, what do witnesses have to see in order to go ahead and convict someone of immorality? If they see a married man and a married woman, in other words, not married to each other, married to other people, going in, they go into a hotel room, the clothes are behind them, is that adultery? Right? Is that enough to convict someone? But Pashtos, no. The Pashtos, that's not enough. So we'll see, Rashi's giving a very interesting yet ambiguous statement over here. Mishnagu inyaniyuf, sheshochvin bikiruv basar. What's the word? Shochvin bikiruv basar? That we see them next to each other. Not standing. We see them next to each other, engaged in some type of intimate act. But yet, again, what are we not seeing? What are we not seeing? We're not seeing mamish amay sabia. So on one hand, again, we're seeing more than just going into a hotel room and closing the door behind them, but yet, again, we're not seeing actual maisabia. So there's this in-between state where we're seeing the kiruv basar, we're seeing ultimately, again, an intimate act occurring, but yet not the actual act of intimacy itself. So again, we're going to define the scope of that later on in the Masechta, but that's the idea. So we'll say, so bottom line is, you can imagine, first of all, interestingly enough, the Rambam adapts the first verbiage of the Mishnah, namely that if a Beis Din kills more than once in 7 years, it's called a Chovlanis. So 7 years. So 7 years seems to be, if you're executing more than one person in 7 years, and I want to point out, we know for a fact that there were times throughout Jewish history where the Sanhedrin was executing more than one person throughout a 7 year period. Because again, now that's a societal issue. Where if we have, you know, Mishirabu Haratzchanin, that ultimately, again, if there's a proliferation of murders, basically, talking about all things being equal, when society is as it should be, if a Beis Din is executing more than one person for 7 years, there's something fundamentally wrong. Lav dafka wrong in the Beis Din. It could be wrong in the societal fabric, but there's something wrong. Furthermore, again, I will say, we reject the approach of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, as much as we saw in Sanhedrin, that we look for whatever reason we can to acquit. especially in capital cases. But at the end of the day, we don't. When we look for every reason to acquit, we look for every normative reason to acquit. The logic of Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon of Dilma Makom Sayef Nakahava, that maybe there was a hole in the place where the stab wound was, that's far we're not going to go. Similarly, in cases of immorality, we need not see the actual Maisabia to be able to execute someone for an act of immorality. We do require, ultimately, again, the witnesses to be able to see, not just going into a closed room together, both sides, you know, going into a closed room together, that's more in the parasha of what? That's more in the parasha of Sota. Right? That's more in the parasha of Sota, which the whole yisod of Sota is, we're not exactly sure what happened. The waters are going to test. But in order to go and execute someone, we don't need to see the Maisabia, but you do have to see what's called, according to Rashi, Mishiago Inyan Niyuf Shishokhu Mikirav Basar. That ultimately, again, there's a Kirav Basar, there's a closeness together, not an emotional closeness, a physical closeness between this man and this woman, even if we don't see the Maisabia. Hadron Aloch, Ketzadin. We'll say Mazel Tov. Mazel Tov. You are almost one third of the way done through the 24-day marathon. Tomorrow will be one third. We'll say Shekoyach. Mazel Tov. How do we celebrate? Eilu Golan. Good. We'll say good. You could take a swig of coffee, eat a bite of a ragalach. Mazel Tov. That's the seal. Eilu Golan. Ha'horik es nefesh. So we'll say now, this parak is going to spend a lot of time speaking about the Ir Miklot. Right? Speaking about who goes to Golos. Ultimately, again, who is exiled? Eilu Hein HaGolan. We'll say these are the people who are sent to exile. Who are they? Ha'horik nefesh b'shkaga. One who goes in and kills someone accidentally. Now, both say, now we're going to spend a significant amount of time discussing what are the parameters of an accidental death or accidental murder. Right? Accidental murder, I guess that's the right term. Good. Accidental killer, right? Manslaughter, I guess it's manslaughter. Accidental killer. We'll call it accidental killer. What are the parameters of the accidental killer? So we'll say, so the Mishnah, instead of using principles, what the Mishnah does is the Mishnah illustrates with cases. So we'll say, remember again, they used to plaster their roofs. Why would they plaster their roofs? Because they didn't want leakage. So what would happen? So if you could imagine again, Reuven's plastering his roof. Now how would you plaster your roof? You'd put down plaster, and then you would take some type of wooden utensil, wooden roller or stone roller, in order to even out the plaster. So if you can imagine again, a roof, Rabosai, as much as we speak about rooftops as being flat, because they were flat because, remember, people used to use their roof for activities of daily living as well, but there was always somewhat of a slope. You always wanted somewhat of a slope, otherwise the rainwater remains there. So let's say, so what happens? So Reuven is flattening the plaster, and if you can imagine, again, this is very important, he is moving the roller downward. The roller is going downward. Hayamaga magila benafla alav, and Nebuch again, he loses hold of the roller, and what happens? It falls off the roof, kills Shimon. So we'll say benafla vargasa, or hayimishal shel bechavis benafla vargasa, or he's lowering down his bucket, and he either again the rope snaps or he loses hold, whatever it is, and the bucket falls down, kills Shimon vargasa, or hayyore besulam. Reuven's walking down the ladder. And what happens? He slips off the ladder, or again, we'll discuss what happens on the ladder. He slips off the ladder and he falls on Shimon and he kills him. Ultimately, again, he goes to Galus. So we'll say, what's the common denominator in all of these cases? What's the common denominator? All downward activities, right? So again, he's moving the roller downward. He's lowering the bucket. He's coming down on the ladder. Aval. We'll say, listen to this. Let's say Reuven was moving he was pulling the roller upward. So if you could imagine, he's standing at the top of the height of the roof, and he's pulling the roller towards him. So he's pulling it away from the edge of the roof. Or, or he's pulling the bucket in an upward fashion. Or he's walking up the ladder. Benafa, we'll say he loses his footing and he falls down. Benafa, la bahargo, hare ze einogola. We'll say in all of these cases, he is not exiled. Now, again, we'll say, I want to be clear. The opposite of being exiled is not execution, right? Again, it's not either you're exiled or executed, meaning there are really three sets of cases as we're going to see. There's what we call a killer b'shogeg, and in any case where you are deemed a full-fledged shogeg, ultimately you're sent to galus. There's mezid, in which case, again, if you're an intentional killer, if you satisfy the criteria, you're executed. And I will say, then there's this whole other group of cases where you're neither exiled nor are you executed. Zach, I will say, this is a general principle. Kol shebederech yiridas agola. I will say, if Reuven ends up killing Shimon, as a result of a downward motion, again, I'm moving the roller downward. I'm lowering the bucket. I'm walking down on the ladder. Gola. We'll say, if Reuven accidentally kills someone in a downward motion, he is sent to exile. V'shelo b'derech yiridasa in a gola. But I will say, ultimately, again, if Reuven accidentally kills one, it's still a case of an accident. He accidentally kills someone. But I will say, ultimately, again, it's not b'derech yiridasa. It's not in a downward motion. Instead, as we'll see, it's in an upward motion. In a gola. He is not sent to exile. Okay. Says the Gemara. We'll say, let's go right to... ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם שהכל נהיה בדברו. So we'll say, you know how many from where do we know this one? So we'll say, how do we know that when it comes to Golos, you're only Gola, you're only sent to Golos if you kill someone as a result of a downward motion? Because the Pasuk says, Gemara is quoting over here, the Pasuk from Bamidbar, so the quoting in the middle of the pasuk, Vayapel alav vayamos. Vayapel alav vayamos. So we'll say, what does that mean, Vayapel alav vayamos? Literally, he falls on him and he dies. Ad sheyipol derech nefila. From here you see, I'll say that Golas, and this is the pasuk by Golas, from here you see that ultimately you're only sent to exile, ad sheyipol alav derech nefila. Until you fall on the victim, derech nefila, in a downward motion. So we'll say, now obviously we have to define the parameters of this. So as I say now again, the Gemara is going to dissect the psukim of Ir Miklot, of City of Refuge. So the pasuk, when speaking about Ir Miklot, says Makan Nefesh Bishkaga. So it's a Bishkaga. So if number one, again, it has to be done Bishkaga, it's an accident. What does that refer to? Prat Lamezid. I will say this comes to exclude someone who kills another person intentionally. If you kill someone intentionally, then lemaisa, what? You don't go to Golos. Again, we're going to discuss the parameters. Again, right now we're going to give the drashas. Then we're going to delve into each of these specific cases. Bivli das, without intention. Prat lemiskavin. I will say this comes to exclude someone who intentionally kills. So the Gemara says, okay, let's analyze this. Mezid pshita. We'll say, I don't need a pasuk to tell me that somebody who kills his fellow intentionally doesn't go to Golos. That's obvious. Why? Bar Ketula, we'll say, if Reuven intentionally kills Shimon, then what? He's a murderer. If he's a murderer, then what? Of course he doesn't go to Golos. He's going to be executed. To which the Gemara says, Ala amarava ima pratla omer mutter. Oh. We'll say, Rava says, rather refers to the following case. Mezid, Rabbi say, refers to a case of Omer Mutter. What's Omer Mutter, Rabbi say? Omer Mutter is where a person says, I thought that killing was permitted. Look at Rashi. Omer Mutter, Savar, stop Rashi. Savar Shem Mutter, La Roges Yisrael, Vizel Mezid Shlosh. Rabbi say, again, Reuven says, I guess I missed that day in Yeshiva. Rabbi says, what happens when you fall asleep in Shir? Right, so I went ahead and I thought that murder was permitted. I never knew that it was prohibited to kill someone. Omer Le Abaye, I Omer Mutter Onosu. Abaye says, well, if it's Omer Mutter, that's a case of Onis. So we'll say, we're learning a lot of things today. Onis, we'll say, is a situation that is even beyond Shogeg. As we're going to see, the case of Shogeg, we'll say, is where the assumption is there is some level of liability. Why is there some level of liability? Because technically speaking, a person could have prevented these circumstances from occurring. As opposed to Onis, refers to the category of actions where what? Unavoidable circumstances. There is no way I could have prevented this from occurring. So Abaye says, Omer Mutter. He'll say, if a person literally thinks that something is permitted, that's what? That's Ones. Isn't that Ones? Isn't that extenuating circumstance? Amar Leish Shani Omer, Ha Omer Mutter Karov L'mezidu. I hold that no, Omer Mutter, he'll say, is not Ones. In fact, just the opposite. Omer Mutter is Karov L'mezid. Omer Mutter, he'll say, actually, is more similar to a case of mezid. We'll say, why is it a case of mezid? We'll say, just because you think that something is mutter, that is a failure in your ability to acquire knowledge. That's a failure in your ability to pay attention. That is a failure in your obligation to learn. That's not karov la'ones. That's not ones. Rather, instead, that's karov la'mezid. But yet again, Abosai, the pasuk comes along to say what? The pasuk comes along to say bivli das means even omer mutter, right? Even still, you're not going to be sent to galus because it's not called an accidental murder. Now, Abosai, now why omer mutter is exempt from galus, as we're seeing already, is a fundamental machlokas. One opinion says why? Why? Because it's ones. Second opinion says no. It's karov la'mezid. So Abosai, everyone agrees that omer mutter. If Reuven kills Shimon because he thought it was mutter to kill, everyone agrees that what? That what? That he doesn't go to galus. Fundamental machlokes as to why. One opinion says because he's an one. Second opinion says not because he's a karov la'mezid. Bivli das. So something again, remember the lashon of bivli. This is just breaking down the pasuk. Bivli das without intention. Prat l'miskaven. We'll say this comes to exclude someone who had kavana to kill. Miskaven pshita. We'll say if I have intention to kill, it's obvious that I don't go to galus because bepashtos aren't I amazed? Pshita baktalu. I'm liable to a death penalty. Amar Rabbi, no, what's the case? Prat l'miskaven laharog es habehima v'harog es ha'adam. So we'll say the case over here is the following. Let's say again, Reuven is shooting an arrow. But his intention is what? Is right, hunting. His intention is to shoot the cow, and he ends up killing a person. Or, Lukusi Varages Yisrael. Or his intention is to kill a Kusi, but he ends up killing a Jew. Lenefel Vaharag Ben Kayama. His intention is to kill a child, right? Nefel was like, it either mean a child in utero, or Bepashas, a child less than 30 days, and he ends up killing someone who is a bar kayama. He ends up killing someone, ultimately, again, who is a totally healthy individual. But say, in all of these cases, are you chayiv misa? Are you chayiv misa for that act? The answer, of course, is no. You're not chayiv misa, because you can only be liable to a death penalty if what? If you have kavana to kill a person whose death would result in death penalty for you. But at the same time, do you go to galus? And the answer is no. Abosai, so we're learning a very important principle. When do you go to galus, Abosai? When you had absolutely no intention for an act of bloodshed. However, if intentionality was there, if you had intention to kill, just you had intention to kill something other than either what or who you ended up killing, that's when you don't go to galus. So we'll say it's a very important yisod. Galus, the act of shogi, we're now defining the parameters. A person only goes to exile. Remember again, I should have given you this background. Galus is a kapara. Galus is a kapara. The fact that the Torah mandates that for certain acts of bloodshed you go to exile, that's because that ad exile is the kapara for your act. The kapara is only effective when there was no intention for bloodshed. But if there was intention to kill, albeit I had the intention to kill the cow, not the person, I had the intention to kill the kusi, not the Jew. So it's at the end of the day, however, if you had intention to kill, then galus is off the table. Then you don't go to galus. So the Gemara goes right there. Tanra Abanon. Imbepasa. So also remember again, the Gemara quotes now over here from the Pasuk, Imbepasa. And Abosai, the Pasuk over here is Imbepasa below Eva Hadosh Adafo Oshlich Lav. Abosai, Bepasa means suddenly. Suddenly. In other words, if ultimately Reuven ends up killing Shimon, suddenly, an accidental, sudden act of bloodshed, that's when you go to Golos. So we'll say, what does that come to exclude? Prat l'keren zavis. We'll say, that comes to exclude a case of a corner. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. It's the third wide line from the top of Rashi. Bepesa prat l'keren zavis. Shaloshon peso b'samach kidikimigernis. So we'll say, Rashi understands that Pesa, or I should say, suddenly means smichos. Means that I am standing right next to the individual. Look at Rashi. So he says, So let's listen to this. Reuven Abosai is walking with a knife, but he's not walking with a knife in his pocket. He's walking with a knife like this, outstretched like this. And what happens? Now again, his intention is not to kill anyone, chas v'shalom, but obviously it's shtickle reckless. So what happens? Abosai, if you can imagine this scene, Reuven's coming from one corner, Shimon's coming from another corner. There's a little bit of a blind spot. So what ends up happening? Reuven ends up killing Shimon as they meet at the corner. So Abosai, the Gemara says, Bepesa comes to exclude that case. Reuven does not go to Galus for that case. Why, Abosai? Because Bepesa, the Gemara understands over here, means that there is an immediacy and proximity between the perpetrator and the victim. In other words, that events unfold immediately and they're in close proximity to another. If again, Reuven started walking with the knife over here and Shimon's over there at a distance at one another, and they end up meeting each other in the corner, that case does not go to Golas. Again, we're going to explore each of these cases in greater depth. Now, so Rashi understands that Pesa means two things: immediacy, proximity. However, again, if the source of Shimon's death was existent already at a further distance, and they're going ahead and they're walking towards each other, that's not the paradigmatic case of Golos. The paradigmatic case of Golos is Pesa, immediacy and proximity. Now, both say, now what we do, now by the way, I just gave you the pshat of Rashi. Other Yishonim don't learn out Pesa, like, well, we're going to go with Rashi for now. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, below Eva, both say, what does it mean? That again, who goes to Golos? Only someone who kills someone else accidentally without any kind of malice. Prat lissone. Both say, this excludes a sone. Both say, if Reuven happens to hate Shimon, even though now what happens, Reuven kills Shimon by total accident, right? There's no intentionality, it's an accident. Nevertheless, because he's a sone, because he hates him, he doesn't go to Golos. Now we'll say, how do you define a sone? How do you define, right, an enemy? So we'll see. Hadafo, we'll say, ultimately, again, already pushed him. Shadachfo begufo. But we're talking about a case over here, ultimately, where Reuven killed Shimon with his body. Rashi says, Shadachfo begufo below miskave. Ultimately, either, like the paradigmatic case of this, we'll say, is where he falls down on the ladder. Right? Ultimately, again, Reuven kills Shimon as a result of just the force of his body. He didn't mean to kill him. Ohishlechalov, or we'll say, or he literally cast upon him. Nahavi yerida shitzorech aliyah. I will say this comes to exclude, ultimately, again, a going down, which is a tzorech aliyah. And I will say, now we will see, look at Rashi for just a moment. Lahavi yirida shi tzorech aliyah, kigon, harotze laharim yado bekoach, vigarzen biyado, umashpil tchilas gufa v'shochel v'na. So listen to this case. This is the case where, let's say, Reuven wants to chop wood, as we're going to say, that's the paradigmatic case of killing b'shogeg. Or Reuven wants to chop something with his axe. So what does he do, I will say? So sometimes, you know, we don't know from chopping with axes. So what do? Sometimes what you do is, obviously the goal is you're going to come down. But sometimes what you do first is you move your body down in an effort to get the full, I don't know whatever the technical terms are, the full impact of the swing going up. So let's say Reuven ends up killing Shimon in the act of going down, but that's a yirida l'tzorech aliyah. So I'm going down in order to come back up. Even if Reuven kills Shimon with that act of going down, ultimately, again, he's chayif for that. That's you. So we'll say, now that's, the chiddush is, the Mishnah already told us that you're chayif for killing someone b'shogeg derech yirida. The chiddush over here is that even if it's a yirida, shehi l'tzorech aliyah. This is the act of coming down, but I'm going down for the sake, ultimately, of going back up. They are ultimately chayif for that. Below tzeda, below tzedia. So I'll say ultimately again. I will say now. Below tzedia also means it's lotzud is lashon of hunting, right? So over here, this case is Reuven's killing Shimon, but without the intention ultimately of doing so. Prat lemiskavin letzadzeh v'halcha letzadacher. I will say this comes to exclude a case of what, where lemaisa again. If I had it, Reuven's shooting arrows, he had intention for the arrow to go to the left and ended up going to the right. Of course, he's not going to be chayef for that as well, but also he doesn't go to Golos. So also remember again, this goes back to what we said before, that Lamaisa, when there is an intentionality to kill, even though my intentionality was for the animal, I ended up killing a person, I don't go to Golos for that. Vasher lo tzada, prat lemiskavin lizrok shtayim vizarak arba. So we'll say, asher lo tzada means I did not have the intention to hurt someone or to kill someone. That's what we'll say, that comes to exclude a case where Reuven's intention was to throw the rock to the Amis, and he ended up throwing it for Amis. Vasher yavo esreihu bayar, he met his friend in the forest. We'll say, by the way, we're going to expound on each of these drushes. My yar rishus lenizak ulamazik, just like the forest is a place where the damager, or I should say the perpetrator and the victim, both have the right to be there. Afko rishus lenizak ulamazik likonin. So we'll say, so too over here, one is only chayiv b'shogeg, if one only goes to Golos, if both the victim and the perpetrator both had rishus to be in that particular place. Boimini Rabbi Avam Rabbi Yochanan. Well, so listen to this case. Listen to this case. What happens if Reuven is walking up a ladder? He's walking up a ladder. And what happens? the rung gives out from under him, and as a result, Reuven falls on Shimon and kills him. Mahu, ki ay gavna, aliyahi, o yiridihi. Rabosai, is that called aliyah, or is that called yirid? Remember again, Rabosai, what's happening over here? Reuven is walking up the ladder. Reuven is walking up the ladder, but yet what ends up happening? He ends up falling down and killing Shimon. So we'll say, is that called aliyah, or is that called yirida? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, aliyahi o yiridahi. It's almost right across from the Agos Habach. Baser didei azlinon, v'hu haya asuk ba'aliyah, o baser shliva azlinon, va'ola lahaya dachko u'mashpila kaivat. So listen to this. What's the fundamental shayla? How do we determine aliyah versus yirida? Do we look at the person? Or do we look at the person? Do we look at Reuven? We'll say, what was Reuven doing? What was Reuven doing? He was going up. Yet Rabbi say, or do we look at the rung? What was happening to the rung as Reuven was going up? It was being pushed down. So do we say that we determine aliyah based on the perpetrator? Based on the perpetrator? I'm calling it perpetrator. Or do we go ahead and do we look at, we'll say, at the end of the day, what caused him to fall on Shimon and kill Shimon? We'll say it was the breakage of the rung. The way the rung broke was how? Was being pushed downward. So that is the fundamental shayla. Do we look at the perpetrator? The perpetrator was going up, in which case, derech aliyah, no, galus. Or do we look at the cause for the perpetrator's fall, which was what? The broken rung. And the way the rung broke was how, Rabosai? By being pushed downward. And therefore, we define this as derech yirida. Amarle, so we spoke about this already. Kvar nagata biyirida shitzarech aliyah. We already spoke about this. Right, so we spoke about again what we call a yirida shitzorech aliyah. And I will say, what do we say? What's the halacha with yirida tzorech aliyah? You chayv galus for that, right? We already spoke about that. That a yirida tzorech aliyah, that going down for the sake of going up, if one kills as a result of that type of yirida, one would be chayv. So we'll say bepashtus. Now again, we'll have to define the scope of this, because what this sounds like is that what? Then every single time Reuven is going up the ladder, if he falls down and kills him, what's going to happen? He's chayiv galus. Why? Because now you're telling me that that's a yirida l'tzorech aliyah. Yet Rabbi said from the Mishnah's case, it's from the Mishnah's paradigm, it sounds like you would not be chayiv. So we'll discuss that. So again, where we're at over here, Rabbi said, is that it sounds like that when Reuven's walking up the ladder, and he fall, and the rung breaks and he falls on Shimon and kills Shimon, that Reuven will be what? Reuven will be chayiv galus for that, because that is called yirida l'tzorech aliyah. Asa, the Gemara is the Kasha. Zaklal, so I will say, because the Kasha from the Mishnah. Zaklal, kol shabaderech yiridasa gola, shalobaderech yiridasa ina gola. So I'll say, one second, the Mishnah said, you only chayv golas when Rabbi say, when you kill in a downward motion. But if you kill in an upward, but if it's not derech yiridasa, you're not chayv golas. The Gemara says, shalobaderech yiridasa la suyemai. When the Mishnah speaks about killing someone, shalobaderech yiridasa, not in a downward motion, what is that referring to? Lav la suyekai gavna. Rabosei, is that not coming to refer, isn't that not coming to include this case, Rabosei, where Reuven is walking up the ladder, and I understand, even though, yes, he's pressing down on the rung, so there's a downward motion, but in his mahus, he's going upwards. And therefore, again, it doesn't the Mishnah teach me that what? That he's not chayiv galus for killing as a result of this. Ulatameich. Kol shabaderech yiridas la suyemai. So the Gemara says, ulatameich. I'm sorry. My love, I say, kai gav. Ulatameich, using this logic, kol shabaderech yiridas la suyemai, the case of where the Mishnah says, anytime you're going in a downward motion, in the downward trajectory, your chayiv, what does that come to include? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara suyemai, ela la suye katsav. The Gemara says, isn't that coming to include the case of the butcher? Hachanami la suye katsav. So too over here, it's coming to include the case of the butcher. I will say, what does this mean? Tisanya, katsav shayim katsav. Well, we'll just finish this to the Mishnah very quickly. Right? So katsav shayim katsav. So I'll say, if a butcher was butchering. Butcher was butchering. So we'll say, now, what's the shot of the butcher butchering? So Pashas, the butcher has his knife or his, you know, his meat cleaver, and what is he doing? He's banging on the meat. So listen to this. Tanach ha'dalafon of chayv ul'achra pater. So also listen to this. So one Mishnah says, if he kills Lafanav, he's chayiv. If he kills Rabosei, Lafanav bepashtos means what? We assume he's coming down with the knife. La'acharav, behind him, which would seem to mean what? He's going up with the knife. He's going to be pater. Vetanya idach, yet another brisa says, La'acharav chayiv, Lafanav pater. If he kills behind him, he's chayiv. In front of him, he's pater. Vetanya idach, another brisa says, Bein Lafanav, bein La'acharav chayiv. Right? Another brisa says that, Rabosei, whether in front of him or whether behind him, he's going to be chayiv. Vetanya idach, Bein lefanav, bein la'acharav, pater. And it was another brayse that says whether it's behind him or in front of him, it's going to be pater. In other words, it will say every single variation of this of chiyuv and pater. But lo kasha. The Gemara says, but don't worry, it is not a contradiction. Kan biyirida shalafanav va'aliyah shalacharav. Kan ba'aliyah shalafanav the Gemara says the Gemara. Kan ba'aliyah shalafanav shalacharav. So we'll say. So bottom line says the Gemara. How do you interpret all of these different cases? We'll say bottom line is the following. Whenever the butcher is coming down, he's going to be chayef. Whenever he's going up, he's going to be pater. So I say, all the Gemara is saying over here is all these different variations of brisos are just referring to different stages of going up and going down. But bottom line is always the same, which is, you will be chayef for gullus when you kill in a downward motion. You will be pater from gullus when you kill in an upward motion. So lema kitanoi. So we'll say, let's say that indeed this is a machlokes tanoim. Now we'll say, remember, now what's a machlokes tanoim? So we'll say, the shayla of Rabbi Avoh. Remember again, all of this, Rabbi Avoh's shayla is our fundamental question, which is, Reuven is going up on a ladder. And what happens? The rung breaks under him. He falls down and he kills Shimon. So we'll say, so what's our shayla? Our shayla is Reuven chayiv galus or not? What does the fundamental shayla depend on, Rabbi Avoh? It depends on, do we view Reuven's, the fact, we look at Reuven was going up, and therefore again, when he falls on Shimon, that's derech aliyah, and therefore what, Rabbi Avoh? Therefore what? Pater from galus. Or do we look at the rung, and at the end of the day, the rung was pressed down, so do we look at this as a derech yirida, and therefore Reuven will be chayiv galus? That's the fundamental shayla. To which the Gemara answers, Lema ketanoi. Say this is a machlokis tanoim. We also watch this very quickly. Haya olu basulam. If he was walking up a ladder, v'nishva tashliva mitachtov, and the rung came out from under him, tani chada chayiv, tani idach pater. We will say, one brisa says he's chayiv, one brisa says he's pater. My love, b'hakam ethigi. So we'll say, so what's the machlokis? Oh, that's machlokis tanoim. Demars aver yiridahi. And we'll say, one opinion says that even when you're going up the ladder and the rung breaks from under you, it's yirida. We'll say, why is it yirida? Because we're both saying, again, because we're looking at, here's the shayla. You want to know what it boils down to? You want to know what it comes down to? What is it that killed Shimon? We'll say, what is it that killed Shimon? Right? Is it the rung or is it Reuven? If you hold that it's the rung, then what? Then it's derech yirida. If you hold that it's Shimon, then perhaps it's derech aliyah. So the Gemara just suggests that maybe this is the machlokes tanoim. Mar savar yiridahi, umar savar aliyahi. To which the Gemara says, no. The chuli amaliyahu. Everyone agrees about say that if Reuven is climbing the ladder, that's called derech aliyah. And therefore what? If Reuven falls off the ladder like that, lemaisa again, he's gonna be pater from galus. V'lo kasha, so we'll say, so one second, so how do you reconcile the brisos? V'lo kasha, kan l'nizakin, kan l'galus. Oh, and we'll say, it's the difference between nizikin and galus. Everyone will agree that what? That if Reuven falls down and kills Shimon, then what? He's gonna be pater from galus. Why? We'll say, why is he pater from galus? Why? Because it's derech aliyah. But, let's say Reuven falls on Shimon, doesn't kill him, and instead what? Breaks his arm, breaks his legs, then what? You're going to be chayiv for damages. That's how you reconcile the two brisos. The other possibility is, hava halagalos. No, maybe the two brisos are speaking about galos. Velokasha, had isli, had lo isli. I will say, listen to this. Maybe the other possibility I will say is where, perhaps again, the rung was, I will say, isli means that lamaisa, again, it was rotted by worms. I don't know what the right term is. Worms. So again, maybe it's talking about a case where the wood was rotten versus the word wood wasn't rotten. Look at Rashi. Ha isli chayv shkoshliva shisli kedar sanala nichvepa sinamata v'yiridahi v'imlo isli ein kan yirida. So we'll say maybe we make the following distinction. If the wood is rotted because of worms, then Rabbi Avoh says it's clear that when you step on it, what happens to the rung? It clearly sags. So if it sags, then lamaisa everyone will agree that that's derech yirida. However, if it's not rotted because of worms, then what? It doesn't sag. And if it doesn't sag, then lamaisa everybody will agree that it's derech yirid, aliyah. B'bayis, and we'll say other possibility is, ha v'ha delo isli. Other possibility is, no, it's not rotted at all from worms. V'lo kasha, It will say everything depends on whether or not the rung was firmly embedded in the ladder. If the rung was firmly embedded in the ladder, then what? Then it's derech aliyah and not chayiv galus. But if the rung was not firmly embedded, then what? It's yerida and chayiv galus. So we'll say bottom line, halacha lemaisa, what do we do? We're going to see tomorrow. Right? You know, I'm going to tell you, so we'll say, just understand what we're leaving off with, because again, it's going to tie into the next Mishnah. We'll say, this is a fundamental yisod. So here's what we have. What we have is, you go to Galus when it's Derech Yerida. You go to Galus ultimately, again, when you kill in a downward motion. Number two principle is, you only go to Galus when I will say, when there was no intention for bloodshed. When there was no intention for any kind of bloodshed. But if you had intentionality for bloodshed, but right, I had intentionality to kill an animal, but I ended up killing a person, then what? That's not called shogeg to get you to galus. But I'll say the fundamental shaila of Rabbi Abo is, what happens again if you're climbing the ladder? If you're climbing the ladder, but clearly Rabbi Abo say, if the rung breaks, what does that clearly tell me? There's something wrong with the rung. That is true. There's something wrong with the rung. Or maybe I have to go on a diet, right? One of the two possibilities. But the yesod is, I know by mitzius, that rung broke because, again, of a downward force. So the shayla is, how do we gauge the latter situation? Do we gauge it by the perpetrator? He's going up derech aliyah, no galus. Or do we look at it based on the rung? Since it was the breakage of the rung that ultimately caused Reuven to kill Shimon, do we look at it through the breakage of the rung? The breakage of the rung was done through downward motion, or downward force. Or do we gauge it as a derech aliyah, derech yida? We'll say, all serious, Emir Tashem, we'll see that halacha l'maisa with that tomorrow morning. Shkoyach.